All right.
Can we start them, please?
Hello, who's calling? Who's that?
Caroline.
Caroline, hello, yeah. No, we haven't. We're just five people at the moment.
Oh, okay. I was just nervous that I was like an hour late. I thought...
All right, because we're already talking on budget matters.
Yeah.
Now, the budget's been moving quite fast, and we've had, since a budget call that Roger arranged last week, there's been a whole series of updated figures and clarifications. So it's changing the report that Roger's going to make to us later.
Excuse me, Mr. Stubbs has joined.
Hello, Ken, welcome.
Hello,
Philip. I'm Sal, and I'm just heading into work, so I'm going to probably switch to a landline, so I'll let you know when, but
okay.
I have something I want to add to AOB.
Right.
Excuse me, Peter DeBlanc is joining.
Peter, welcome.
Good morning, Philip, or whatever time it is.
It's afternoon to me.
All right.
Peter, Ken Stubbs.
Hello, Ken.
How you feeling today?
Pretty good.
Good.
Excuse me, Mr. Forsythe has joined.
Grant, good
morning.
Good day to you. Morning to you. early morning. Is
indeed.
It? Yes.
Philip?
Yep.
At some point in time, we might at least have some discussion about how we're going to deal with...
Is me, Philip Grunancy's joined?
How we're going to deal with these time zones in the future, because I know Grant's down there, Bruce is
on... YJ
and some of these people is going to be a pretty stressful deal of every meeting with them in the middle of the night.
Yep. No, indeed, and it's particularly, worse this time of year in terms of the way that the times are off it.
That's right, you're on daylight savings, aren't you, Grant? He's already fallen asleep again.
Morning, Ken. No, I was actually just reaching for the teapot.
What time is it, 1 in the morning for you?
3 a.m. for me.
Oh, and it's 1 for Bruce Tonkin, I think, in Midland.
Yeah, that's correct.
Mr. Karp has joined.
Carrie, you're very welcome.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, Carrie?
Yeah?
I've asked Glenn to take minutes, and she's going to inscribe them on runestones.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah. Anyone who knows what a runestone is, you're doing pretty well then.
Why, I use them every day. How else would I know how the day was going to go?
Well, the only ones I've found in North America, the Danes and the Norwegians planted about 1,200 years ago. It's runish. So.
In all seriousness, in my neck of the woods, these are a common feature of the landscape, having been there for 1,000 or so years.
Now, Richard, you're welcome.
Yep, hey, Bill.
Excuse me, Mr. Carey has joined.
Excuse me, Mr. Mueller's joined.
From Honolulu.
Hello.
Aloha.
Hey, Milton. How's the weather? I don't know. It's dark outside. And I'm sitting in the bathroom, so I won't wake up my baby.
Sounds like a fun holiday, mate.
Life has changed, hasn't it, Milton?
Excuse me, Ms. Portanoff has joined.
Hello.
Hey, welcome, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, bonne année. Bonne santé. Meilleurs voeux à tous.
Et merci.
We are only three?
No, we're about 16, I think, including...
I'm sorry.
Listen onlys. Trying to check how many NC we've got.
Do we have any staff yet?
No.
Excuse me, Mr. Tonkin is joining.
Come on, Bruce, wake up. Hello, Bruce.
I'm awake. It's Bruce Tonkin from the Registrar's constituency.
Bruce, you're very welcome. Welcome to your first call.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Mr. Rhodes is joining.
Hello.
Hello.
Greg, you're welcome.
Thanks. Who's there?
Okay, we have most of the names council. I'm just checking our laws. Is also with us.
Yes, Philippe, I just arrived. I'm on the call now.
Perfect. Is Oscar Hobler or Tony Harris with us? I don't see them, but otherwise I think we're almost there. We've certainly reached quorum. And also Tony Holmes, are you with us yet? Not so far.
Marilyn will be late, Philip.
Right, okay. And YJ is not with us yet either, I think.
No.
She's holding a proxy for Vanny. Oscar Cheney and that... Okay, let's make a start then. We've reached a quorum. First of all, in terms of the agenda, are there any other items to add?
Philip, I wanted to raise the thing about the chair.
Okay. And, I'll add that. Ken?
Yes, I was going to make a suggestion. Since poor Milton's stuck in the bathroom, maybe we can switch the agenda around to give him the next slot and take item number two, make it item number three, and vice versa there.
I have to say, Milton, you'll first take that earlier than later, is that right?
That would be great.
Excuse me, Miss Park is joining.
And YJ, welcome. Okay, we can happily swap around items two and three. No problem with that. Okay, let me first of all welcome our two newcomers. That's Bruce and Philip.
Thank you.
So you're most welcome. I'm glad that I hope it's not such a social time, I think, for Bruce, but we'll see if we can do something about that as these calls go on into the future. First item is approval of the summary. Can I have a proposer? We have, I think, one slight change that's been made to that, which is the recording of the vote under item D3. That was the budget recommendation to ICANN. Glenn, can you just clarify what that was?
Yes, I was asked to give account of the people who voted in favour, and when I did that, I noticed that there were 14 in favour, 3 no, and 2 abstentions, and I had noted 3 abstentions.
Right, so the amendment we're making is simply changing the number of abstentions on that vote.
From 2
against us, I'd like to move for approval of the summary as presented.
Okay, well, as presented and amended, yes. I take it, Ken.
That's Peter to block off, second that.
Okay, thank you. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Those against, please say no. Those abstaining, please say abstain. Perfect. That's passed. Thank you very much. Second item. Let's take this item about the chair Caroline asked to. Yeah.
Philip, I'm going into my garage, so can I actually ask that it be if you hold off a little?
Okay.
I may be inaccessible here.
Okay. Well, then you go in the garage and pick up a landline. So that takes us to point three. Which is, we'll take that as soon as we have a completed point. So let's go on to point three, and this is miltonand.org. Milton, the floor is yours.
All right, thank you. Well, we have a report. It was distributed about a week ago. I hope y'all had a chance to read it. The consistency of the policy that we've been developing has been upheld through the last 3 months. So we've been working out really our details. As you know, the first bump in the road we hit was the notion of sponsored and unrestricted did not meet with Louis's approval. And what was suggested at that time was that we outline the policy objectives that we wanted .org to follow and not worry about whether it was called sponsored or restricted. And that's pretty much what we've done in this draft. We have retained most of the main thrust. I think everybody pretty much agrees that we want .org to go to a...
Excuse me, please. Miss Marilyn Kate is joining conference.
Sorry for being late, sir.
Hello, Marilyn. This is Milton.
Hi.
Okay, Marilyn. We're just on item three now. We've changed the order, and Milton is presenting his .org report.
Thank you.
I'm in the bathroom, and Carolyn's in the garage.
And this is becoming a familial situation.
That's right. So the characteristics of the organization, I think we have put a lot of work into Section 1 in terms of fine-tuning the language. And again, we spent, I think, about 2 weeks fine-tuning that. Some people had trouble with the words controlled by non-commercial, so we have altered that language. There was some concern about the degree to which the organization had governance structures that were open to org registrants or influenced by org registrants, so we tried to word that more flexibly. There was some debate about two substantive issues, which I think were resolved. There was some discussion of a clause regarding the incumbent operator and promoting competition, which probably should not go into the final report because of some dissent, but which a substantial number of constituencies would sign on to a supplemental statement. And then with respect to the subject of restricting registration in .org, again, I think this is a more of a question of shades of meaning rather than a fundamental principle. I think some constituencies, maybe two, certainly one, would prefer more restriction, and most of them would not. Most of them prefer the report as it now stands. And that this is, again, best handled via the supplementary statements of constituencies. So the report is before you. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I want to thank the task force members who really pulled together. Ken Stubbs in particular did a lot of work with me at the last minute, and I think we're...
Excuse me? Mr. Holmes has joined?
Pretty much on the same ground here, and I haven't heard any major objections from anybody else at this point, so I think we're ready to go on this.
Okay, Milton, thank you for that. I'll move on to Grant in a moment, who's got a proposal also to put forward, but just on the report itself as presented by Milton, are the questions for him?
There's a comment from Ken Stubbs. Can you hear me?
Yep, Ken, go ahead.
A little bit faint for me, Ken.
Okay, fine, I'll take it off the...
It's much better now, great, that's better.
Okay, number one, I'd like to thank Milton. I don't think people realized how hard this guy worked to try to pull all this together, and I think he did an excellent job, and there's a real spirit of cooperation, and I'd like to say that there was a significant amount of interaction there at the end, but everything, in my opinion, the spirit of cooperation really prevailed at the end, and I would like to let Milton know that I fully support the report as in its final preparation there. Again, thank you very much for the hard work.
Well, thank you.
Okay, other comments or questions for Milton?
It's Caroline. Can you hear me?
We can, Caroline, yeah.
Okay. I know Ken raised an issue about one of the provisions about the election and the registrants having participation in that effect. And when I read the change that was made, I noticed that Ken was on board. And I was just wondering if maybe either Ken or Milton could speak to it, because I guess when I saw the changed language, it seemed as if we're still giving the registrants the ability to, you know, dictate who is going to kind of run this thing. And I'm just concerned only from the perspective that I think it's most important to have people of skill and experience, and not just necessarily be, you know, a vote of the registrants.
I'll be happy to comment if to start it off with.
Okay.
Caroline, yep. I did express a significant amount of concern, but I think if you review Section 1C now, you'll find there's flexibility, because what it says basically is that applicants are encouraged to propose governments. There's no strict restriction on this, and in, my personal opinion is that what we are doing is trying to provide a structure and a set of policies that we are suggesting to the board for use in assisting them in evaluating these structures. And from a practical standpoint, if the business model doesn't make sense, and if there was a strict requirement that director selection of officers or election of board members was required by all applicants, there would be a, it would, could create an environment that may discourage people who might be very interested in proposing, who have the qualifications in terms of the ability to provide effective customer service and the technical facilities. But I think there's enough flexibility there, and also I have to have confidence in both the board and the staff's ability to evaluate the proposals as they come in. And so I feel that there is enough flexibility there. It's not as rigid as it was initially proposed. So that's
okay.
My opinion.
Thank you. That's fine.
Okay, other questions for Milton?
Yeah, this is Richard Phillip.
Richard, go ahead.
Yeah, Milton, you know, we read with interest, you know, Louis' views on this, as I'm sure you did. How have you reconciled that? How have you reconciled the notion of the sponsoring entity, which has sort of ownership of the policy of the space, with the notion that it looks to be an unrestricted space, at least in terms of policy, if not in terms of sort of contractual incentives to market for non-commercial. I guess another way of asking that question is, you know, what is the role of the sponsoring entity in your view? What are they going to be doing on a day-to-day basis?
Okay, that's a good question. We really, under this framework, there's not, strictly speaking, a sponsorship organization anymore. What there is a very careful delineation of the type of organization that we want .org to go to. That is, we have specified very clearly that it has to be a non-commercial in orientation, that it has to be not just a non-profit, but also something that is representative of and supportive of non-commercial org registrants in particular in the initial delegation. So with that specified, my understanding is that Louis and the is satisfied with the legal framework. In other words, once the policy objective has been specified in that way, they will work out the details of how it fits into their contractual arrangement when they're accepting, writing up the RFP. And we're telling the board and the prospective applicants what we want them to do. And we've done so in this draft in a way that is consistent with ICANN's existing contract. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think that does. Thank you, Milton. I appreciate that.
Let me just elaborate a little bit.
Excuse me. Mr. Tony Harris has joined.
Good morning.
Hey, welcome. You're just joining the call. We're talking about .org, and Milton is taking questions on his report. Milton, go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry for the delay.
The basic point is that the organization to which it's delegated, we want their incentive to be to differentiate .org and to make sure that it's managed in a way that's appropriate for the intended community. They still have to define that. But in terms of complying fully with what a sponsored domain means. It simply doesn't work with .org because of its legacy characteristics. So the best way to do that is this way. And the problem with making it sponsored is that you have to do all kinds of supplementary things from a policy standpoint, including consistency and exercising limiting who can participate in the governance, which is another important thing that a lot of people had problems with. If you had a sponsored.org, for example, you would have to limit the number, the type of people who could participate in its governance. And a lot of people had problems with that. So this framework, I'm quite sure that the management of ICANN does not have any problem with this framework. In fact, in some ways, we followed their suggestion to simply specify the policy objectives and let it be worked out in the RFP process, in the application process.
Excuse me, Mr. Coyne has rejoined.
What the actual details are.
Okay, Milton, thank you for that. Grant, would you like to introduce your suggested friendly amendment that you had emailed to the Council earlier?
Yeah, sure. And part of the VC's suggested friendly amendment, I guess, goes to some of the answer that Milton's just given to that question. And that is, I think Milton is correct in that the report really seeks to communicate policy objectives without necessarily suggesting particular legal or organizational structures. We've steered away from specifying or suggesting sponsored, restricted, unsponsored, etc. So, and the BC supports that that intent of the report. Having said that, I guess one of the major concerns for the BC is that .org not just continue being an undifferentiated domain space, and when I say undifferentiated, particularly undifferentiated from .com, etc. And so therefore, in order to support it going forward as a differentiated domain space, we do think there is desirability in having some restricted access. And that really, the question of restricted access is the only aspect which is specifically addressed in the report. So that's our first wish, is to communicate to the board that while we support the policy intents of the report, we would also just wish to note that from our perspective, it would be desirable to ensure that there is some differentiation with .org, and we think that's best practically achieved through some restriction. And that goes to the first suggested amendment, if we want to look at it that way, that we would have for the report. On the second amendment, and just let me note a comment from Ken here as to how we might consider these amendments. He suggested that perhaps we should consider them separately, and I think that's a good suggestion, and we're very happy to have our two suggested additional comments taken separately. So on the second comment, really what we wanted to communicate to the board there, that again, as we understand the policy objectives of the arrangements with VeriSign, which give rise to the opportunity for .org to be divested, the major policy objectives of that arrangement is that divestiture would go to creating more competition in the registry space, and therefore, and we, VC, fully support that, the increase in competition, diversity, and hence bringing in new investment in the registry space, we think is a good step forward, and we just felt it was desirable to include such the recommendation to the board, hence our second bullet point there. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. Let's take questions, perhaps, or clarifications that anybody would like to have on those points first.
I'm Bruce Conkin, representing registrars.
Bruce, go ahead.
I guess the comment I would have from registrars, there has been a lot of discussion on this document, both through a small task force of members of the registrars' constituency and also wider discussion. But I think the general view within registrars is that they do not want any restrictions on registration within .org because the history is it has been unrestricted, and to add restrictions would cause hassles both for registrars and we also believe registrars. Having said that, I accept the comment that we do want to try and differentiate .org from .com. And I guess my suggestion is that you can differentiate a domain by value added or services that can be built on top of the domain rather than just in trying to restrict registrars. So I just add that as a comment, because I would see that over time .com, .biz and .info begin to distinguish themselves from each other probably more by the additional value-added services that they may offer.
Okay, thanks, Bruce. Other questions or comments?
Philip, this is Roger. I have a comment as well.
Right.
The GTLD registry constituency, like everyone else, didn't have the benefit of Grant's specific proposal until recently, so we never looked at the language that he's circulated now, but we did discuss the concept because it was raised in the task force. I think there's the constituency feels pretty strongly that it is not the role of ICANN and by implication not really the role of the Names Council to give guidance, much less restrictions to registries on whom they may procure goods or services from. It would be, in our judgment, really improper for ICANN to instruct the .org registry that they cannot purchase telephone services from AT&T because AT&T is a dominant telephone carrier, just as it would be improper to instruct the registry that they cannot, that they must purchase package delivery services from UPS because Federal Express has too large a share of the market. It's really not the role of ICANN to get into the detailed operations of registries and start giving them guidance or instructions on how to conduct their affairs. So I think the registry is the registry constituency is concerned about the entire concept of trying to get into the operations of registries and issuing instructions to them, and on that basis doesn't support anything like the intrusive language I think Grant is proposing.
Okay, Roger, thanks for that. Other
Look, can
questions?
Can I just comment on that?
Yeah.
Roger, the wording doesn't identify any particular provider of services. So your suggestions or analogies regarding AT&T or Federal Express, etc., I don't think are correct. What we are seeking to communicate to the board is a positive support for what I think is generally understood to be one of the cornerstones of ICANN's purpose for being, and that is to increase competition in the domain space and to ensure stability, etc. And it's for those very reasons that we have wished to communicate, as I say, positive support to the board in that endeavor.
Yeah, I think to raise it to the broader issue, I think the constituency's view is that registries should be left free to undertake procurement activities in whatever way they see fit, and to the extent that ICANN has a role in giving them guidance or instructions, it should be along the lines of get the best goods for the best price or the best service for the best price. But beyond that, it's not really ICANN's role to start
whether at the generic or at the specific level, tried to manage the procurement activities of registries any more than it would be proper for them to manage the procurement activities of registrars or CCTLD registries. It's a pathway that I think the constituency feels is improper for ICANN and leads us into all sorts of issues in the future. If you accept the principle here, then it should easily be applicable elsewhere.
So, Richard, I've got a comment.
Richard, go ahead then.
Grant, it's kind of a practical question. In practical terms, if this went through, how would you define dominant providers? How would that be established?
It's a good practical question. It's not one which we feel need to elaborate on. In other words, if the board and if the staff and if the community is of the view that there is dominance in the marketplace, then that would be, I guess, called upon or rested upon in making decisions. Now, what I think, if you just look at the process that we're talking about here, firstly, we are communicating support and, I guess, drawing attention to, as I say, what I think is generally accepted as a cornerstone to the purposes of ICANN, i.e., competition, increased competition and stability in the domain space. So that's where we're coming from. The question as to how that actually is achieved, I think, firstly, the process we're saying is to give policy advice. The board will then use that policy advice in constructing a process for the divestment of .org. In that process, again, if the issues of competition and stability are communicated to the prospective applicants, which again we think probably they should be, then it'll be up to the prospective applicants to specifically identify in their application to the board and hence to the community how they would seek to further the cornerstone objectives of competition and stability.
Did I get in here, Phil?
Was that Northern one to speak?
Sure.
Okay,
we have to separate the discussion and voting on these two aspects of the amendment. I'm somewhat at a disadvantage. I'm not online, and I don't even know exactly what's being proposed. My understanding is that BC was going to propose a supplementary statement expressing their feeling that they would be happier if org was sponsored and restricted. My feeling is that we had quite a bit of debate on this over 4 months. And that it would be disturbing from a procedural standpoint to go through that whole task force process talking about an unrestricted.org but differentiated, and then at this stage to completely change one of the cornerstones of the consensus that we have rather laboriously built up. The problem with that is not just that it seems to reverse a position we've been going forward on for some time, but that we really haven't thought out the implications or even the full policy definition of what we mean by restriction. Now, here's an example. Obviously, everybody's talking about grandfathering existing registrants if you have restrictions, but we have really not at all discussed, again, because we haven't thought that we were moving forward with a restricted model, what it means to grandfather, whether that would even work. This is something, remember, that there are maybe several hundred thousand people that you're talking about, registrants that you're talking about, and that this differentiation between two classes of registrants, grandfathered and ungrandfathered, would have to be carried forward in perpetuity. That would also create strong incentive for major speculative registrations in .org in the next year, because anybody who registered before the divestiture would have this special status, and anybody who registered after wouldn't. Again, I just went forward with this task force with a very strong feeling that while everybody thought it would be nice if org were more differentiated, that we were not talking about sponsorship and restriction as a way of achieving that, and I really would have trouble passing on a report that had not fully thought through the implications of imposing restrictions. Another issue I have is if we pass the pro-competition aspect, my understanding is that the GTLDs support this report as it now stands. If we add that and they vote against the report, I would be unhappy, and I would be willing to, again, leave that out of the final report, but submit our constituency's report support to a supplemental statement so that the GTLDs could vote for this report and get it through.
Okay,
put me in the queue, please. Ken Stubbs.
Procedure question. Ken, I'll take you now, and then I'm planning on moving back to Grant and then to a vote, because time is against us. Go ahead, Ken.
Can you give me a call?
I'm sorry, someone else stepped
in. So was that Carrie wanting to speak as well?
And I was trying to as well, Philip, just briefly if I can.
Philip, I'm going to give up my place at this point in time, and I'll speak later on. I think it's fair that people who haven't had a chance to talk like Carrie.
Thank you, Ken. Carrie, go ahead.
Philip, can I just, as a point of procedure here, which I think may be constructive to discussion and that people
yes,
are having here. What the BC is suggesting is, I think, exactly what Milton is suggesting from a procedural point of view. We are wishing to support the report as it stands without any change to the words. What we wish to have appended to it is our minority view. And we are not seeking people's other constituencies' support for our minority view as a requirement or as a part and parcel of passing the report.
Okay, that was my understanding.
I think that's very important. Then, if I understand, Philip, the state at this moment, there's no amendment or proposal on the floor. The business constituency is simply educating us about their views.
Correct, giving notice, if you will.
But the proposal, nevertheless, is to add this to the report, not merely doing something separate. Isn't that what you were doing, Grant?
Yes, I think Milton's terminology as a supplemental minority view is what it is we are seeking to do.
So, Carrie, go ahead.
Okay. It's also a procedural issue. Without in any way commenting on the substance of the BC amendment or in any way wishing to constrain their putting their views forward, as a member of the task force, I'm not sure I feel comfortable having things I don't feel comfortable having our report used as a vehicle for things that were not discussed in the task force. As I think it is the task force's purview to decide what is attached to its own report.
Philip, can I get in the queue on that?
Okay, go down this procedural road. So, okay, Carrie, that comment is noted. Richard, you also wanted to speak, but is this on this point of procedure or is it on substance? If it's on substance, I'll take you later.
It's on substance.
Thanks. In that case, Ken, you on substance or procedure?
I'm on substance, but why don't you give Marilyn a chance to talk because she hasn't chatted yet.
Exactly.
You've got
two
people
who
haven't talked once, and I'll come back. Thank you.
Marilyn, go ahead.
I just wanted to make a point on procedure. As I understood it, that may be responsive, Carrie, to your question. I think that actually the procedure would be as follows. The report is received, reviewed as it is being now, and discussed by the Names Council. A resolution is then passed, which accompanies the report and goes to the board, and the amendment, the amended supplement is attached with the resolution. As opposed to being proposed to amend the task force report.
Can I just, Marilyn, if that's the business constituency's understanding of the procedure, this is Roger, just asking
further. I'm actually asking that.
Let me ask another question so we can get it clear. The business constituency obviously has the prerogative of sending its views to the ICANN board anytime it wants, so it doesn't need to attach them to a Names Council recommendation to the board in order to communicate with the ICANN board. So if I understand correctly, the motion before us is a recommendation, a proposal from the business constituency that they be permitted to attach their views as sort of an appendix to the Names Council resolution on this matter, as opposed to the business constituency simply sending their views to the board directly. Either way, they go to the board. The only difference is if they do it directly, they don't need our permission. They can just do it, but they want the Names Council to agree that they can attach it to the Names Council resolution. Is that it's a motion to permit the business constituency to attach its views? And by the way, I'd remind everybody that our bylaws provide that there are provisions for minority reports depending upon the vote that takes place in the council. There's a formal minority report that's filed if the ratio of support for any resolution falls below a certain level. So I think, Roger,
your interpretation is essentially correct. I mean, some task forces reports in the past have themselves incorporated a minority report before it comes to council. And in this case, the BEC is proposing this addition at this stage, which is a similar process. But also, I think the BEC was seeing if there was other support to the substance of what it was saying, in which case the text before this addition may reflect that. I think that's the only subtlety that I see.
But my characterization of the motion is correct, that it's a motion to permit the business constituency to attach its views to as an appendix to the resolution. Is that's really the motion before us?
Grant should respond to that, I think.
Yeah, Philip, can I...
Grant, go ahead.
No, Roger, I think your characterization is absolutely correct in what you note as the opportunity for the BC to communicate its views to the board. No, we are not seeking the Names Council. We're not putting a resolution to the Names Council that our minority views be appended. It really is to give notice to the Names Council that these are two points of view which we will be communicating to the board. And the reason for that is in case other constituencies share our minority view, then we would encourage them to support the resolution for endorsing the report, and with notice that if they share similar views, additional views that we do, they can join us or communicate their own minority view to the board. So no, we are not seeking to amend the Names Council resolution to adopt the report, and that's probably my mistake. I apologise for that in talking about, quote, a friendly amendment.
This is Bruce Tonker from the Registrars. It seems to me that the Names Council is not voting on this. The Names Council is just noting it. And that
correct.
Then, the other document is what we're voting on, and that's what we're transmitting through to the ICANN board.
Philip, can I be in the queue?
Was that Louis, you say?
Yes.
Okay, Louis, you can. Go on, can you just respond to Bruce's comment first confirm if that's correct or not?
I think Bruce's interpretation of what I just said is correct.
Okay, so we would not then be taking a vote on...
the BC's minority view, no.
On the BC's minority view. Okay. Louis, go ahead.
Just a procedural point that I believe the Names Council's procedures would contemplate that all minority views would be included with any submission to the board.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, but hang on, I think that's consistent with what I'm saying, Louis, in so much that we are giving notice that this is a minority view that we will be sending up to the board with the report, presuming that the report gets endorsement from the Names Council.
But Grant, I think Louis is saying something different, which is, I think, more consistent with my understanding, and maybe we could ask you, Louis, what I thought you were saying is, let me just see if I can follow this through. There is a minority statement or report from the BC that has been discussed. There will be a resolution that hopefully passes positively the report, but appended to the resolution will be both the report and any minority views, as opposed to minority views being separately submitted. Can you clarify that?
Yeah, I believe that's correct, and let me actually turn this over to Philip. It's really his committee's report that put in this requirement.
Could I also, I think while you're looking for that, say, this is Roger, my recollection is that minority views are required if the proportion of votes falls below a certain level, but permitted under all circumstances. So if depending on the vote on this, there may be a requirement that there be minority views, but under any circumstances, it's my recollection they're permitted.
Okay, well, then to my mind, what I'm hearing is it's clear that that what the Names Council has, what the BC has done is given notice to the Names Council of a minority report, and this will go as a minority report together with the main report if we pass the main report, as would any other constituency's minority views.
Philip, this is Ken Stubbs. Can I ask for a question on procedure here as well?
Yes, you can. Can I just check if everybody agrees with the interpretation I just gave, having heard from Louis?
Can Louis or somebody clarify whether my statement was correct, that they're always permitted but under circumstances required?
Roger, you're speaking in terms of the bylaw provisions in Article 6B.
Exactly,
and,
correct.
Without looking at them, I think that's generally right. I was actually speaking of some internal Names Council procedures that you adopted at your last meeting of the committee that Phillips chaired report. There is attached to that a statement that working groups should... the working group reports should actually have to the Names Council all opinions heard and also attached and also impact statement by the various constituencies.
Yeah, I think that's
Richard.
Okay, I've got Richard in the queue, and also was it Ken?
Yes.
But Ken first, I think it was.
Okay. Two things. Number one, I'd like to go back to the statement that Milton made at the end there. We worked long and hard to try to get this thing taken care of, so I'd like to ask Philip as soon as possible if we could call for a question. Number two, irregardless of the vote, if the report passes, so we won't say irregardless, should the vote be affirmative and moved up, I'd like to request that the chair allow for a reasonable time period for any minority views or positions to be attached to the report you understand what I'm saying there.
I do. That's also consistent with the fact that we should probably have a 2 weeks public consultation period as well following our vote anyway, so that will be consistent. Richard, you had a point.
Yeah, I was actually going to echo the procedural thing that Ken just mentioned. So, but also just on a sort of substantive point, just for us all to think about as we consider the second part of what Grant wrote. Again, as a practical matter, I'm just wondering who that language would exclude. If when I think of dominant providers, you know, I think automatically affiliates, GNR, most CCTLDs, New Level, all of whom have less than 1% market share, my sense is that they're not covered by that language. I'm wondering who is. You know, clearly Verisign, but I think that's already covered in the two-party agreement on divestiture. I guess the only other people that come to mind that it might affect would be Nominet or DNIC, I guess who are dominant providers in certain regions. So I'm just wondering for us all to think as a practical matter, what that language is actually going to do and who's it going to affect apart from the existing language.
Okay, thanks for that. I think if we can, I'd like to move to a vote on this. What we're going to be doing is voting on the .org report presented to us by Milton. If we accept that, there will then follow a 2 weeks public consultation period during which time any constituency would be able to also, like the BC, submit a minority report, which will be then appended and described as a minority report and attached to the main report in 2 weeks' time and then be sent to the board. Is everybody happy with that procedure? Please say if you're not. Excellent. I hear silence, and then let's call the question then. Milton, I take it you're the proposer for this motion?
Right.
Do I have a second then?
Peter DeBlanc will second.
Peter, thank you for seconding. Let's take the vote now, starting with Marilyn Cade.
Yes.
Grant.
Yes.
Caroline. I'll come back. Caroline, you there?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Laurence.
Yes.
Guillermo.
Yes.
YJ for YJ?
Yes.
YJ for Vanny?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Milton. Are we able?
Yes.
Yep. Ken.
Yes.
Bruce.
Yes.
Philip.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Elizabeth.
Yes.
Oscar's not with us. Tony Harris.
Yes.
Greg.
Yes.
Tony Holmes.
Yes.
Roger.
Because of the particular situation that I'm in and my employer, I want to make clear that I'm voting on behalf of the GTLD constituents.
As always.
The GTLD constituents, in that capacity, I vote yes.
Thank you. Terry?
Yes.
And Richard?
Yes.
Okay, that's passed. Unanimously, thank you very much. There will be a two-week public consultation period on that report, and other minority reports could be appended during that time.
Just, again, a point of... Did I understand that YJ voted Fanny's yes despite the terms of that proxy? That may just... My reading of it is an instruction to vote no.
Well, my understanding is yes.
Looking at paragraph 2, she says that unless certain language is added, she wouldn't support the actual policy statement of org.
And I must say, Lee, I was confused by what 2 meant. I was, my own reading of the proxy instruction was, I was a bit confused by it.
It's probably up to YJ to view what her instructions are.
I was just going to say, this is really between YJ and Vanny.
I think Roger's right. It is between YJ and Vanny. But I think my own feeling is actually YJ has got it right. If you look at the various conditionals contained within that paragraph 2, I think it means that Vanny was in favor of the main report, but she had concern if we were voting to add things into it. But as I say, it's really between YJ and Vanny.
So what I did was I tried to call Vanny before the teleconference, which was the reason I was a little bit late, but I could not reach her because her cell phone was busy. But I sent a note to confirm whether it is yes or no. But in my written confirmation, I sort of tried to, clarify the way I understood it. And if there is different understanding from hers later, I asked for her to email me during the call, which until I cannot get any email from her yet, so...
Okay, YJ, that's fair. I think what you've done so far is exactly right. So let us move on, and I'll take this additional point now concerning the NC chair. So if I may, while that's discussed, I will hand the chair temporarily to Caroline. Is that okay, Caroline?
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you very much. You have the chair.
I propose that we obviously look at the issue, given that Philip's term is expiring, and my personal recommendation would be to, amend our rules to allow Philip to rerun. But the question is there anybody, one, who's interested, and or let's have some discussion about whether or not we should allow chairs for more than 2 terms. Currently, the rules read...
Can you give the citation on the rules to Caroline, which passage you're quoting?
it would be one, Names Council Chair, 1.1, the election, the NC Chair will be elected by the members of the NC by simple majority vote, will hold office for a period of 6 months. 1, renewal, subject to a fresh vote of 6 months, will be allowed. A retiring chair will not be eligible for re-election for a period of 1 year, as the current rules. So under these rules, Philip would not be able to run. Like I said, not speaking as a chair now of this meeting, but as personally, I'm proposing to, I guess, change the rules so that it would allow Philip to run for one more term.
This is Bruce Tonkin from the Registrar's constituency.
Okay, anyone else that wants to speak on this issue?
Yeah, it's Richard Tindall.
Okay. All right, Bruce and then Richard.
Thank you, Caroline. I'd be a bit concerned that we would take a vote on this at this call. I think it might be appropriate to table that if someone wants to propose it, and then we can go back and discuss it with our constituencies. I know for one that I would be probably voting against on the basis that I have not yet had the chance to discuss it with the constituency.
Richard?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Bruce, and let me preface by saying that our constituency thinks that Philip's done a superb job, and we think that he's a fine human being. But as a general principle, you know, I think the rules are there to look at a rotational distribution of chairmanship amongst the different constituencies, and so as a general principle, we support the idea of adhering to the current bylaws, but we certainly at the very minimum want to have a nomination period and see which nominees come up, before we look at whether we like to re-elect our current fine chairman.
Bill, can I ask you, does your term end right before ACRA? In other words, will you be chair for the February meeting?
I can still chair February, but that would be it, yeah.
Well, it seems as if, I think that's fair enough. I think, fortunately, the issue got raised because I think sometimes, because Philip's doing such a good job, we just keep moving forward without thinking that we have to elect someone. I can put together, my motion or something to amend, and I can email it and allow discussion, offline during this next month. And I don't know if we should set up, in any case, even if we amend the rules, we should, like you said, I think, still have a nomination, perhaps procedure and an election.
This is Carrie. May I speak, please?
Yeah, go ahead, Carrie.
Yeah, I think we should be very careful about separating the issues. And if we have a call for nominations and there's no particularly attractive nominee, okay, Philip can continue. I think we talked first about changing three separate issues. The first is, do we wish to change the rules regulating terms of office? The second is Philip's term of office regulated by the old rules or the new ones as they might become? And if subsequent to those two issues being resolved, Philip is not in the chair, then it would be appropriate to open nominations and have an election for the chair. Mm. But there's something unsettling about a sneak preview about what the alternatives might be prior to resolving what is the key issue.
Yeah, I think that's right. It's separating a personal decision on who should be chair from a procedural rule, and that's
right.
We should treat procedural rules.
I'm sorry, what was your last part of that? We should...
It's Bruce Tonkin speaking on the registrar's side. I think we need to separate a personal issue of who is the best candidate from an issue of a rule change. And that's treat those as two separate things. But we need to just forget who the individuals are, whether they're good or bad, but whether or not we think people should serve three or four terms or two terms or whatever. So a particular rule has been struck, and then if you're proposing a change to that rule, let's debate that and get feedback from the constituencies without attaching a name to who would fill that role.
It's Marilyn. Can I get into you to speak? I have a procedural question.
Yeah, go ahead, Marilyn.
I was not on the Names Council at the time that the procedural rule was established, and I'm not challenging the need to go back and consult with the constituencies at all, but I'm looking for... I think the Names Council has evolved considerably in the work that it has been doing, and I guess I'm sort of looking for just a comment from some of you who were around in those earlier days about the establishment of this rule.
I think I'll speak first, and
then
if I'm
after you, Carolyn. Yeah.
Is that Ken?
Yeah, after you.
that, you know, I think there were two schools of thought. I mean, I think there were some people that thought consistency was good and that we didn't want to necessarily rotate too often because, you know, the minute you get new faces in that maybe aren't familiar with the procedures and you kind of lose the momentum in terms of discussing, you know, substantive matters. And yet there were other people that felt that because we all do represent different stakeholders, that it wouldn't be fair for any one constituency to be chair for too long of a period. And so this rule, I think this rule, you know, was designed so that we did not necessarily have the same person chairing, you know, for an undetermined amount of time.
So just a clarifying question, because I was an observer on several of the calls, and I had thought that one of the benefits of this, and Ken may be able to elaborate, was that it gave a chance to assess at a set period of time the next step.
Ken, you want to speak?
Well, I'm not exactly certain what you mean by that comment, Marilyn. Either I'll ask you to rephrase it, or I'll just give you my spin on what
sure.
I understand the background for this is.
Sure.
Let's go back a year, year and a half, because this, I think I was the first chair that was, that came in under this guidelines. There was a significant amount of concern in some of the earlier elections about making sure that there was a balance of chairmanship amongst constituency as well as the global balance, number one. Number two, we were operating at that point in time with Elizabeth, who had done a marvelous job but was a volunteer. And we recognized that there was a significant amount of burden on Elizabeth, and it became even more of a problem in terms of communication when if this changed every 6 months. It was kind of a matter of re-education. So there was a decision to extend the term to a year to take into consideration those various concerns as well as the practical situation of just managing this. Since that time period, we now have established procedures for dealing with the agendas and intake committee. We now have a formal secretariat who's dedicated to fully supporting whomever has that position. And I think from a practical standpoint, we've come a long way. So I would say that from a practical standpoint, you know, that's how I see it evolving. And rather than make a specific commentary on it, I would note the fact that I would want to go back and support what Bruce had said with respect to dealing with this issue anyway. But that's the background, Marilyn, that I have.
Thank you. Well, I think given that we have kind of a month to play with, I said I can issue an email that would propose and deal with the procedural issue first, if I'm understanding everyone correctly, regardless of then who would step forward to be nominated. And just thinking of timing here in terms of whether we could do that offline so that we could then, you know, have the election.
Carolyn, this is Roger. Can I just be clear on one element of what it is you are proposing? Are you proposing that our procedures be permanently changed, or are you proposing that we waive our procedures at this single point in time but keep the procedure intact?
I personally would be in favor of not having a restriction, only because you still have to go through the process of re-election and still have to be receive your majority vote. But if someone truly is doing a good job, and having been chair, I can tell you that it is very, very time-consuming, and when you don't do it well, the whole NC suffers. That's not being said that there aren't other great candidates, except for, you know, I guess we all, I think, would agree that Philip has set a very high standard. And so my feeling is that having seen what the purpose of the rule was, but having seen where we've come, I don't necessarily see that if people felt that any one chair was doing a good job and wasn't being biased toward their constituency, that we should have a restriction in there if people end up voting in favor of that person. That would not preclude others from being nominated or seeking election. It just means that if people felt someone was doing a good job, that they could stay on for more than 6 months.
And Caroline, to clarify again, and so your proposal would be that we keep the 6 months election, but lift the restriction. Is that right?
Exactly, right. Okay. We still have to have enough, because it's only fair. I mean, again, I'm saying Philip, and I'm not going to put anyone on the spot here. There may be others that are interested, and there may not, but you know, I think people do have to have time to consider it and go back and not be put on the spot today. So, yeah, if there's other people that want to be nominated and done a good job either in task force or in other capacities, there would still be that nomination and election period.
Therefore, you're proposing a permanent change to procedures, which is fine, as a motion, and then that will be taken back to our constituencies to get their views.
Exactly. And I'll put something in writing and send an email out. And I guess, though, what we would have to do, though, if we're going to do that and then also have a nomination, and you know, I'm looking through the rules really fast. I don't think, unlike, you know, GA elections and things, we don't have, and correct me if I'm wrong, Philip, but you know, I don't really have rules on timing of nominations and elections.
No, we don't. It's because these are internal rules, like the rule we're discussing, and we set that according to the meeting that set it up.
Okay. So, you know, my proposal would be, and if this is enough, I don't know if 2 weeks is enough for people to, if I get the email out today or tomorrow, 2 weeks is enough to get people to talk with their constituencies, so then we would have, or maybe even 3 weeks, but then have a 1 week kind of nomination period, and then have the election on the next call.
Caroline?
Yeah, who's that?
This is Ken Stubbs. Can I make a comment, please?
Yeah.
I do want to express some concern about one thing. First of all, forgetting about Franklin Delano Roosevelt, but rather concentrating on the fact that there is such a strong desire amongst the members of Names Council to try to cooperate and to have good relations with other members of the Names Council that I would hate to see an environment created where a qualified member of the Names Council may be reluctant to allow themselves to be placed in nomination for fear that they may in some way or another incur the displeasure of other Names Council members by, quote, rocking the boat or something like this. This is the reason why I think there has to be a specific term, and I think I'm somewhat troubled by the idea that we wouldn't have some sort of guidelines there, and I think there should be we should have an environment that encourages, as ICANN has done, diversity, and I think it's up to the Names Council members to determine whether or not that person is step into the shoes. I think that Philip's done a superb job this last year, and I think we've come a long way. But I also know that the infrastructure supporting Philip is much more solid than it was over the last two or three years. So those are my concerns. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Yeah, it's Richard Tindall again. And just I apologize, I should know this, but at the moment it's a six-month term, right, with a two-term maximum? Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that might be attractive to us, and we'll talk about this in our constituency, might be to extend the minimum term to 12 months. I'm not sure what's involved in doing that, but for purposes of continuity. But so you know, we might recommend that it be a 12-month term. But I'd have to echo Ken's views, and I need to go back to our constituency. But at this point, I think our view is going to be that. You know, with multiple constituencies, each you know, legitimately wanting to have chairmanship representation at some point, that 1 year, you know, could make it a very long cycle before a particular constituency had a chairperson if they wanted one. I guess 7 years, you know, might take, and extending that even further would be, I think, you know, we'd view that as a problem. But so, you know, we'll be talking about this.
Yeah, look, this is Bruce Thompson from the registrars. I hadn't realised, again, because I'm used to this
group that we're talking in 6 month blocks. So, again, I think it's difficult to start debating this in detail now until I think everyone's had a chance to talk to their constituency. But as a general principle, you might consider your original proposal, as I understood it, was to be completely unbounded. And I think, well, just expressing a personal view, I'd be uncomfortable with that. But whether the bound that we have at the moment is reasonable is another matter, and it could be that the boundary is too short, and that the maximum period of time could be 2 years or something. I think having a bound on it is beneficial.
Well, one thing I think would be helpful then is, you know, again, in crafting something, and I guess look forward for common and friendly amendments then, if there are things that in the motion that, like you said, if right now, you know, we've never looked at, do we think even, like you said, a six-month term is too short? And if we extended it to 12 months, would we then allow a re-election for another 12 months, you know, with a maximum of 2 years? I mean, I think these are all good ideas. And I think you're right, things have changed, I mean, since we made the rule and since we've come a long way. But one thing, at least, that was even a problem, I think, back then is, I think everyone appreciates the chair is a very, very hard, time-consuming job. And there weren't always very many volunteers. In fact, it was a little, I think, prodding to see if someone would, you know, bite the bullet and step up to the plate. And maybe that has changed since now. But I would be surprised if we had 10 nominees come February.
I think there's also a learning curve issue in this as well. I mean, forgetting the names council. Again, as Bruce Tonkin and I'm not speaking from experience of being on the council, but if I use my experience in other areas, as a chair, I wouldn't be, if it was a chair of the board of a company or anything else, I wouldn't see the chair changing regularly at a 6 month interval, because it's almost 6 months before you really get into the job.
Right. All right.
Tony Harris, can I speak?
Is that Tony?
Yes, Tony Harris. I'd just like to say that I support Caroline's motion and all this, and I think there's no need to feel too uncomfortable with a more extended period for the chair. We take a risk on ICANN board members. We elect them for 2 years. In the first election, one got elected for 3 years. So if we can take a risk with an ICANN board member, I think this is more than reasonable.
All right. Again, I will send an email and welcome comments and friendly amendments that, you know, we might massage it a little to make people comfortable. And it may be that there's not enough support that it won't fly anyway. But I look forward to your comments. And would a nomination period 1 week before the call, do people feel that's sufficient? And then we'd have the election on the call? Would anybody object to that kind of accelerated schedule?
That would be at the next February teleconference?
Correct. So 1 week before that, we would take nominations. And, you know, I suppose if people wanted to endorse or send in statements or
so would we be amending the rules before that? Or?
Well, it depends. We're trying to separate the two issues. So depending on what happens on the procedural, which will be done before that one-week period, that will decide, I guess, who can be nominated.
So we'll amend the rules over the email list and then hold the election next time.
Right. We either will or won't amend, depending on
what. Caroline?
Yeah, who's that?
It's Ken Stubbs. Can I make one small suggestion, and that is
let's wrap it up. Go ahead.
Yeah, instead of making it 7 days, let's make it 10 days. That tends to cover weekends and problems with communications or responses.
Okay. I'll put together a final email then, giving you the schedule, and then, like I said, just give me data to put together some language based on what I heard, and like I said, let's just work offline, and then expect a... starting 10 days before the February call. Back to you, Philip.
Okay, Caroline, thank you. Thank you very much for that. And I thank you, Names Council members, for the compliments paid during that dialogue. We move on to the next item, which is business plan update. You recall we have an existing business plan we passed about a year ago. I just went through that looking at areas where we needed to make some changes because progress has been made or times have changed. I sent this about 2 weeks ago, actually on the 6th, out to the early in that, right, to the beginning of the year, to the chairman of the various task forces for their commentary, and it was since circulated to the Names Council, and with a reminder for this meeting. In that circulation, Caroline had come back and made some suggestions for change on the UDRP, refining the time frame we had there, together with some comments in terms of the second part of the process, which is relating to the WIPO domain name process 2, and she had suggested the appointment of an individual to monitor developments there, which I think was a very useful suggestion. There are other sections there which haven't been amended in terms of detail, under who is and transfers and IDNs. The .org wording had been changed and advanced by Milton in the paper in front of you. I was hoping that we could adopt this document today, but I think in view of the change that the Caroline suggested, I'd like to add that and then perhaps pass it for a rapid affirmation at the next meeting. And also to see perhaps if highlighting at this meeting the those involved in both the WHOIS transfers and IDN task forces may have some specific additions to make. And now let me open up for discussion the any comments that you have on the business plan midterm revision. Any comments?
Oh, this is Wifey. Thank you. I wanted to make a comment regarding the TLDs, the number 2.
Yep.
Do you refer to this? I mean, if I look at the strategies, work region established, or future board committees on both objectives, and do you refer to the existing the board committee, the new GTLD evaluation committee, or...
Yes, what I was referring to under work within established was precisely that committee that that you and others are currently involved in, and I was also assuming that following that there may well be future committees set up by the board, and we would wish to see participation in those bodies as well.
And if that's the case, GNSO doesn't have any plan to form its own, like TLD working group or task force within the GNSO. Can I interpret that way?
That would, I mean, yes. What I'm suggesting there is indeed that we work closely then with the board on that in respect of just that part of that existing mission, which is the. In particular, the evaluation of the past in terms of TLDs and criteria for the future.
And also, if I remember the Caroline's comment, she sort of proposed to change B to time frame 2002 to 2003, and is it going to be reflected in the next revision, or...?
Yes, I was certainly planning on including that suggestion. I thought that was probably a good pragmatic suggestion.
Well, but my personal view is I think this current version 9 sounds good, especially regarding TLDs, and I don't know why we have to delay until, like, 2003, because probably... That might be also practical to, like, propose changes and roll out schedule for restoration by the item board.
Okay, Caroline, would like to comment on that?
You know, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. I just think that, you know, again, we're dealing with only that part B there, that if we're talking about additional new applicants for new TLDs, if I'm reading that correctly, we're not talking about the 7 that are added, and if I'm misreading it. So I thought that it would be very unlikely to put a to say that that's going to happen in 2002, given that the new TLD task force, you know, is just starting to review the current ones, and you know, not all those new TLDs are even operational yet. So I just, you know, again, I looked at the business plan, and I know we want to keep it at a high level, but you know, my only criticism was just that I think it needs to be a little more concrete, and it needs to be a little more realistic in terms of what our time frames are. And you know, I'm queen of extensions on the UDO. And, you know, I'm learning. I'm making mistakes, and I'm realizing things are taking longer. And I just think that, you know, realistically, I just don't see B getting started at all until 2003. But it's no big deal. I mean, we just changed the deadline, so I'm fine leaving it as it is.
Okay, were there other questions?
Philip, is it Milton? Following up on what Caroline just said, then over the mailing list, well, we could propose tweaks to this particular report, or are you asking vote on it now?
No, I think I would like to have some slight changes made in terms of greater specificity in certain areas, and for those changes to have happened to allow me time to circulate an amended report that we would adopt rapidly at the next meeting. I think it's really just looking for, as Caroline was suggesting, a bit more concrete detail, in particular for those task forces that are up and running now, where they have a better view as to what they can achieve.
So YJ, you could propose amendments to that schedule going forward in the next couple weeks.
Okay. Well, actually, can I respond to Caroline's comment? And I think, I mean, I fully understand Caroline's concern with, I mean, maybe too high sort of objective for us to achieve this everything, but probably it be, that's why I create the DNSO's own task force within the Names Council or whatever platform to discuss these issues in a more open manner that might facilitate all those outcomes of the TLDs, because as part of the task force, committee member of the DTLD evaluation, it's been quite difficult to work on that issue too, because there are too many people from the other community. Many of us cannot sort of, I mean, communicate well among the committees, I mean, within the committees. So I think if DNSO can establish its own task force or whatever, it might help or facilitate this whole move at the end. And that's my sort of suggestion.
Okay, Roger, thank you for that. I also perhaps ask in particular Marilyn and Tony with who is in transfers, perhaps look at the text that we have there and see if there are some additions that can be put in there in terms of where you think the council will be based on the work in your task forces.
And we'll just respond electronically, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yep. And then I will do a final draft and we can adopt it, hopefully without discussion, at the next meeting. So let's move on then. That was items two. We did three already. Item four is budget. And I'll hand over to Roger in just a second. When Roger gets on to talking about some items in the budget and the teleconferencing, I have some comments of explanation to add there. So I'll jump in at that stage. Roger, if you could just briefly lead us into that item.
Thank you, Philip, and I'll try to be brief on this. We really have sort of two action items for the council, both of which were described in the report that I circulated a few days ago. For anyone who has not seen it, I should note that subsequent to my circulating our report, Louis Tutone circulated to the council an updated and final DNSO financial report for year-end 2001, and the result is that there are some differences between the assumptions and figures that I cited that we cited in the committee's report and the final numbers that came in. I'll come back to them in just a minute, but first, just to, in passing, to note for the council that
The budget committee's met a couple of times in the past 2 months. We've dealt with a number of routine matters, most of which had to do with paying what I would describe as routine invoices that come in that fall under the $5,000 threshold that the committee has authority over, and addressing a number of contract items or contract clarification items that have arisen in the context of our new contracts with for services in 2002 and in the context of closing out the contract from or the remaining contract issues that arise from the services that AFNIC provided during 2000. The two action items are both described in the committee report, so I won't spend a lot of time on them, but I'll just briefly say that the first has to do with an unusual situation that arose with regard to the registrar constituency. Like all other constituencies in the year 2001, the registrar constituency was assessed a dues of $15,371. The registrar constituency is reported at this point, and this is where there's a difference between the data I gave that the committee recommended to the council and the data that we now have before us. As of year end, the registrar constituency is reported by ICANN management to have paid in a total of $30,357.14. These payments did not come from the constituency per se. These payments came from individual registrars who were making payments to ICANN, presumably for a variety of reasons, one of which was the registrar constituency dues to the DNSO. This meant that the registrar constituency had overpaid its 2001 dues by what is now a total of $14,986.14. That number is different than the one in our report, which was $12,736.14. Again, the difference being additional payments came in between mid-December and year-end 2001. Budget committee, having investigated this, is satisfied that this represents a good faith, unintentional overpayment to ICANN by registrars of registrar constituency dues, and that the overpayment should be refunded to a man named Brian Evans, who is acting as an agent for the registrar constituency. In the amount of, and here I'm proposing that our report be modified, is consistent with the intent of the budget committee. Instead of an amount of $12,736.14, an amount of $14,986.14. So I'd be happy to answer any questions on it. It is, I think we all should note that there is a serious and important element to this, and that is, registrars have made payments to ICANN when ICANN was acting as our agent and custodian of the funds, and we are now taking money that was paid into ICANN and turning it over to Brian Evans. All of this, however, is based on our investigations and conclusion that the registrars were making payments for purposes other than DNSO dues, and that the registrars who made those payments genuinely intended that they would wind up in the hands of Brian Evans acting as an agent for the registrar constituency. So we're satisfied making the recommendation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Roger, this is Ken Stubbs. Can I make a couple comments, please, to help clarify?
I think you're representing the registrar constituency. Probably
absolutely.
Helpful if you did.
Yeah, first of all, let me we'll start out with Brian Evans. I think it would be best to indicate that Brian Evans was formally elected as treasurer of the registrar constituency, and the registrar, the funds are going to an account that's been established for the registrar constituency, of which Brian Evans is acting as the manager for that account, number one.
Number two, if we go back, let's say 18 to 24 months ago, actually a little bit longer than that, we had a circumstance in the registrar constituency where we were not formally incorporated as a constituency, and as a result, it was impossible for us to have our members forward funds to us in a way that, first of all, would allow for accountability, and number two, under sections of the applicable tax code, there was no way that these funds would have been held to have been tax deductible. We contacted ICANN, and it requested that ICANN handle the administration of the funds. And I'm sure Louis is on here, so he'll be able to correct any or clarify any comments. And when the funds, when the invoices were billed to the registrar, individual registrars, they were not billed as DNSO constituency dues, but rather were billed as registrar constituency dues. And they were instructed to either wire or transmit the funds to ICANN specifically for that purpose. So it's important for you to understand, and I have documentation, any of you who wish to examine this, and you could also contact Ian Schroeder as well if you had any desire to, that when the registrars made these payments, the individual registrars clearly made the payments with the understanding that the funds were being held, that the funds were being delivered to ICANN, who was acting as the handling the funds at the time, because we did not have a structure to deal with this. Now that we do have a structure, all we're asking very simply is for authority to have ICANN give us the funds that represent the excess over the amount of the constituency's obligation. I would also like to remind the members of the Names Council that the registrar constituency is fully in compliance with dues and totally paid up to date. So I'm not asking for, on behalf of the registrars, for anything that realistically we shouldn't be entitled to. Also, with respect to a precedent, this was not a formal payment of constituency dues that we're now asking back, you know, as an overpayment. It was never intended as solely payment for constituency dues, and is documented as such. Thank you very much.
Okay. By the way, Ken, one point you mentioned, you may want to amend the committee report, which I'd be happy to accept as a friendly amendment if you wish to, but the request, my interpretation of the request that we received from Brian Evans and the way that our report is structured now is that the payment of $14,986.14 would be made to him, and that we are accepting his assertion and your confirmation, others' confirmation, that he is acting as an agent for the registrar constituency. Are you proposing that the check be made payable to the DNSO registrar?
Well, I do not know exactly how the account is titled, and what I would propose very simply was this, and that is, first of all, let's assume that we have a member of the ICANN staff here. I think if ICANN would be comfortable with assuming this responsibility, we could ask the staff to ensure that the funds, in effect, are being transmitted to an account which is being held for the benefit of the constituency, and leave that up to the ICANN staff to determine that.
I think that puts an investigative burden on them. Let me.
Well, you're making it out to be, frankly, between you and I, more of a burden than is necessary. I think you can get a certification of this from the executive committee of the constituency.
No, actually, let me try another way and see if this works, and that is that the check be made payable to Brian Evans or whoever he designates.
Well, I'm no problem with that. I think I
leave it to him to decide who he wants a check made payable to.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's important, this is Bruce Tonkin from the registrars, that in the resolution that you use there, you use Ken's original wording that Brian Evans elected as treasurer by the registrar's constituency and on behalf of the registrar's constituency.
Okay, we've identified him as an agent for the registrar constituency. You want him described as a
treasurer.
Okay.
Yeah, he's an elected official
Okay, can I...
I think that wording would be more sensible. I just have, Ken, if I have one thought, which is entirely pragmatic.
Sure,
sure. None of us have any problems about refunding money if it was overpaid for whatever reason. Rather than incurring banking costs to send this money to the registrar's constituency, and then, as we get on to the second half of the same item, setting fees for 2002 for which the registrars are going to be invited to participate, would it be sensible just to avoid banking costs and work for you if any refund was a refund less the fees that we agreed to in a moment? Is that a pragmatic way forward?
I don't think that's a pragmatic way forward, Philip. Very simply, if you look at, first of all, the funds that are sitting in the ICANN account represent, that $15,000 represents all of the potential working funds for the constituency, number one. And the constituency has shown and always made its kept its obligations to ICANN and acted in good faith. So I would say very simply that, first of all, this was not an overpayment of constituency obligations to the DNSO, and I think that's the point that you're missing. This was money that was sent to ICANN because ICANN had the ability to accumulate the funds, and it was never earmarked as constituency dues when it was DNSO Names Council assessments. It was always indicated that it was constituency dues. It would be no different than if your organization that you work for in Belgium was to make its business constituency dues payment directly to ICANN on the assumption that ICANN was holding the funds for the constituency. You would be making the payment there, assuming that the funds would be going to the constituency, and it would be mislabeling it to say it is anything else but that.
Okay, no, just a practical thought to avoid bank charges. It wouldn't work. Other comments just on this particular point?
Philip, let me put the recommendation in the form of a motion, which directly reflects the language of the budget committee. There's no substantive difference, just so there's a formal motion. The Names Council approves a payment of $14,986.14 to Brian Evans for his designee acting as the treasurer of the DNSO Registrar Constituency as a refund of the Registrar Constituency's unintended payments to ICANN.
Okay, I'm happy to call for a vote on that. Does anybody oppose what we're doing at the moment? Let me just check for that first. Sounds promising. Okay, all those in favor of Roger's motion as placed, please say aye.
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 Those against, please say no. Those who want to abstain, say abstain. Okay, that's done. Thank you very much. Roger, carry on.
Next item is the proposal for a DNSO budget for 2002. The Budget Committee spent actually quite a bit of time going over different budget assumptions and spending assumptions. In the end, I think we relied significantly on input and forecast from our new secretariat, Glenn De Saint Jerry, on what kind of actual expenses we're likely to incur this year. To make a long story short, the total expense budget for 2002 we propose as $97,961. The breakdown is in the Budget Committee report, so I won't belabor it, but the two-thirds of that is secretariat-related, divided between AFNIC and FISAT, which is the corporate organization that Glenn works for, and the rest of it is an amalgam of other operating expenses, the largest of which is telephone expenses, covering both teleconferences and the secretariat's telephone costs. The committee has recommended that any budget surplus
that...
Okay, Roger, can I stop you there? Yeah. Let's take this in stages so we can structure the debate. So this is just on the expense side of the budget 2002. I'd like to explain about one item on names council teleconferences. And this is within the 97,000 figure that Roger gave you, represents about $13,000. You will recall that in the past we have been fortunate in attracting sponsors for Names Council teleconferences, and we have often been calling on the same people for this, and a number of them have been expressing some disquiet about that. Now that we're moving forward in terms of more regular financing and the way that we have our new secretariat, Glenn has been in contact with ICANN, who also have frequent NC telephone conferences, looking at the implication of us financing these ourselves, and has been successful in a proposal whereby we would join existing ICANN contract with one phone provider, that is MCI WorldCom, and therefore benefit by quite a good deal in terms of the reduced overall cost of those calls. At the moment, as I say, we're paying almost nothing for them because we've been sponsored. The cost that sponsors have been paying have tended to be between sort of $13,000, $15,000, $16,000 per call, $1,500, $1,600 per call. In the budget, we're budgeting per call at a figure of $820, which is a figure that Glenn has got from MCI. However, linked to that are a couple of things that we currently have that we may no longer have. I wanted to make sure that Council was happy with that. First of all, the provision of toll-free numbers actually incurred a total additional cost. So although the caller gets it free, it means the rest of the whoever's paying for the call actually subsidizes the toll-free numbers, which are anyway more expensive having that facility. And our suggestion is that we don't have that facility anymore. The other additional cost item, which can be quite significant, is listen-only ports, which you recall we've had in the past to for transparency purposes. And those costs can add up to a third of the cost of a telephone conference, which, based on our budget at the moment, would add something like an additional $620 per constituency. You're aware that we now have a facility regularly done by Philip Crennel at the Secretariat of MPEG-3 recordings, which are available almost straight away after the conference. And the figures in the current budget envisage that those listen-only ports would no longer be the case, but that the MPEG-3 recordings would continue as we're now incurring those costs ourselves as the Council. I wanted to make that point clear to make sure that we were happy with that. Any comments, please?
Thank you, Philip. Let me ask before others, if Glenn, are you on the call?
I am.
Did you want to expand on any of the explanations that Philip gave in terms of the implications of the telecommunications, the telephone segment of the proposed budget is $14,160?
No, I think he's explained in full about that.
Okay.
Okay, if there are no comments on that, then Roger, please carry on.
Okay. The $97,961 expense would lead to an allocation by constituencies this year of $13,994, assuming seven paying constituencies. I do want to note a very important assumption the Budget Committee's made, and that is the Budget Committee at the time that we developed the budget estimated that there would be a surplus of unused funds by year-end 2001 of around $41,000. Since then, if you look at the final year-end reports that ICANN has provided to us, they now state that the surplus of funds at year end 2001 DNSO funds at year end 2001 are $56,785.63. The committee's recommendation is that these funds not be applied to operating expenses in 2002, but be left alone to act as a cash reserve. Now, at the time the committee made that recommendation, we did so on the assumption that there would be somewhere up to $41,000 in cash reserves, and at this time, since the committee did that, we're now advised that the cash reserve would be $56,000, close to $57,000. However, in either case, I think the important factor to note is that ICANN management, and if Louis would like to expand on this, please feel free to, has advised us that they feel it is essential, if they're going to manage the funds for us and act as our contracting agent, that the DNSO maintain a cash reserve of what they now indicate would be in the neighborhood of $60,000. In order to cover the possibility of cash shortfalls at the same time that they have contractual expenses that they have to make. So although the numbers have changed since the Budget Committee report was completed, the committee accepted the principle of a cash reserve, but I should be clear that at the time we did so, we presumed it would be in the order of $41,000, and it now is clear that it will be in the order of $57,000, but that is the amount that ICANN now indicates they think must be put aside anyway. So I think that presents the whole picture. So to summarize it, it would the Budget Committee's recommendation is around $98,000 of expenses in 2002, and the maintenance of a substantial cash reserve, which covers the fluctuation of an unpredictability of revenues coming in to the DNSO. I think there is another important item we need to discuss in this context once we deal with these two, and that is how much do we want the constituency dues to be, because in addressing that question, we must decide whether we're going to invoice seven constituencies or six constituencies or five constituencies, given that various constituencies have taken different positions. But let's deal with the budget. It's how much we're spending first, and please keep in mind that the council must then decide how many constituencies will be invoiced. So I think that presents the recommendation. I'm happy to put that in the form of a motion as well.
Bill? Okay, Roger, thanks. Let's take some questions about that. Was that Ken?
Yes.
Yep, go ahead.
I have a question for Glenn, and then a follow-up after her response. Glenn, it's Ken Stubbs here. Currently, I noted on the minutes that the conference is being recorded by Philippe Renault using MPEG-3. Approximately how long after the conference is recorded is the streaming audio available on the DNSO website?
It's available about half an hour afterwards.
Fine. Given Glenn's response there, I do not think that it would be necessary for us to continue to provide the listen-only ports. The purpose of the listen-only ports was to give somebody in the outside public the opportunity to listen to a council meeting on a very timely basis rather than having to rely on any written transcript, which naturally can be delayed for a few days, or even the audio transcripts that were most courteously provided in the past by Brett Fawcett. A half an hour delay in real time isn't worth spending an additional $6,000 or $7,000 a year. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken, for that. Other comments on Roger's presentation? Okay, let me say something. I have some concerns about the size of the reserve that we're now proposing to keep. If we attempt to finance the entire budget presented, this is the order of 13,900 per constituency. Originally we had been looking at a reserve of something like 30,000 as necessary to keep as a cash float. And I'm wondering if actually keeping a reserve of 57,000 odd, is, and not taking any account of that in the core fees for 2002, is a little over the top in terms of conservative budgeting. Because I feel that also the part of the purpose of reserve there is actually not the fixed amount you need at the cash flow that's going to be relevant over time. And assuming that we get fees in during the first half of the year, I'd have thought that a lower starting reserve would be sufficient, and probably 30,000 would be about right. So I'd be interested in other comments on that. The effect of that, of course, would be to reduce the total call on constituents if we were to do that.
Yeah, I have a comment on that. This is Peter.
And this is Louis. I'd also like to explain a bit more.
Okay, fine. Peter and then Louis.
Yes, I support this, Philip, your comments. It sounds like the price or the consequences of having ICANN handle the collections but the administration or the pass-through, the banking of the DNSO budget, if that's going to be pegged at in excess of $50,000, right now there's no significant interest coming down the pipe with low interest rates. That is really an excessive burden because, as you point out, Philip, that's going to increase the overall dues. That reserve continues to get bigger, and that increases the contribution, for which basically, in my explaining that to my constituents who are obviously having a difficult time coming up with the money already, is that they will simply say, well, you know, we're adding to the reserve that's kept at ICANN, and that is not, in fact, money going to support the DNSO. So I support what you said, Philip. We need to get that reserve reduced or consider some other way of handling that money.
Okay, Peter, thanks. Adu, you wanted to give a word of explanation.
Yes, the reserve has to do with the fact that this surplus is being measured at the 1st of January of each year. Historical performance has been that significant constituency contributions do not come in till June. The implications of that is that you must have enough funds at the beginning of the year to pay about 5 months worth of expenses. At a $97,000 budget, that comes up to something just shy of $50,000. That's the principal feature. The second feature is that in the arrangements with the DNSO secretariat, the consulting arrangements, the process we're working on envisions giving them 3 months tenure. In other words, they cannot be terminated on less than 3 months notice if they're on the grounds of insufficient funds. That works out to $16,000 and some change as well. And that's how the $60,000, $55,000 number is addressed. So it's certainly quite welcome to find other arrangements. I would be very dubious, though, that you can find someone who will lend you credit, and I am under very explicit instructions from the board not to do so.
Louis, while I agree with what you're saying, that doesn't mean that the $60,000 reserve has to be there for the entire year. I think that's my point.
All right. And that's exactly right. It's just that if you're budgeting, you should budget in a way that at the end of the year, you've got enough to carry you over until the next money comes in.
Caroline?
Philip, I have a comment as well.
Okay, so that was Caroline and then who?
Roger.
Roger. Okay. Caroline, go ahead.
I would just say that in terms of, you know, any surplus and in deciding our this year's dues based on the surplus, that there be the underlying premise of fully paid up constituencies. I don't think it would be fair for the fact that others timely paid their dues, that somehow this year people that haven't are getting a break based on the good fortune that other constituencies ponied up.
Right, because indeed the surplus of $57,000 at the moment would be greater if all constituencies were fully paid.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Roger.
Just I wanted to comment on one thing that Louis said and point out that there, for the benefit of everybody thinking about this, we as the DNSO and the Names Council actually have two different relationships in this regard with ICANN. They're closely related, but they're distinguishable. One is that they're the custodian of our funds, so we sort of give the funds to them, and they manage the funds, they collect them, keep the accounts, pay invoices when we tell them to, and that's a service that they provide for us at no charge, but it's basically a funds management relationship that they have. And if that were the only relationship we had with ICANN, then you would say, well, if we get in trouble, then their responsibility is to simply say, well, hey, you guys, you're in trouble because we got more invoices than we have cash. But there's a second relationship that we have with ICANN, which is related but really quite different, and that is they serve as our legal agent when we enter into contracts. So the council is authorized and requested that ICANN enter into a contract with various third parties to buy services from them, but the other parties, FISAT and AFNIC, the contracting party to them is not the Names Council, the DNSO. We don't legally exist. The contracting party is ICANN, so it is ICANN corporately that's on the hook to make payments to them. If FISAT and AFNIC send their invoices in, and there's no money in the till, FISAT and AFNIC are perfectly entitled to collect their money from ICANN, whether there's money in the budget or not. So I think it's that contractual side of our relationship with ICANN that gives more rise to their conservatism and wanting to have money set aside than it is the pure funds management aspect of what they do for us. And I say that just to clarify the point that Peter was making. I don't think that their reserve requirements are because they manage the money for us. I think it's more because they serve as our contracting agent, and thus they're on the hook to make the payments.
This is Ken Stubbs. Can I make a comment, please, Philip? After.
Okay. Yep. Go ahead, Ken.
I didn't know whether there was anyone in front of me. I think the one thing we need to take a very close look at, and we have tried to do this in the Names Council budget, is as most of us are involved in business, we're familiar with the concept of maintaining working capital. There's an obligation here for us to maintain working capital, and frankly, ICANN was able to, and I'm speaking for myself, satisfy me that the basis for some of their assumptions, i.e. dues, receipts, and cash flow over the last 2 to 3 years, were clearly in line with the representations that Louis was making with regard to timing. Regardless of what direction we move here, I think each one of us has to realize that the facts of life are such that we have to have adequate working capital to be able to support the operation of the DNSO and to ensure that any obligations that we are contractually obligated for, whether it be through ICANN or whoever it be through, are reflected in whatever final number we arrive at. So let's keep that clearly in the back of our minds, please. Thank you.
Philip, let me offer a proposal on this, which I think might respond to the concerns that both you and Peter have raised, as well as the understandable caution that ICANN management has, and that is that we at this time accept the $57,000 as a cash reserve, with the council instructing the budget committee to keep an eye on this and review it at the earliest possible time, but no later than mid-year, and report back to the council on the need for a cash reserve at that time. So that if in fact no money comes in, and ICANN's conservatism is justified, then we can report back. That's a good thing we did it. But if, in fact, all the money comes in right away and their conservatism was overdone, then we can report that back, too.
Okay, Roger, that's one possible way forward. I'm still slightly concerned that the total size of the reserve is higher than needs to be at the start of the year. It seems that we have adequate there to cover at least 6 months plus of expenses. Comments from other constituencies. The decision we're about to make now has a direct money impact on your constituency and your call, and we will need your support to accept that call. So please comment on this issue.
This is Caroline. I don't know what we're going to be voting on, if it's just a number or on this kind of report.
I think what we're proposing is the acceptance of our budget and therefore the size of the fee call for 2002.
Right. Philip, actually, I'm segmenting the proposal into two parts. First, that the Budget Committee's proposal of an expense budget of $97,961 with a $57,000 reserve be approved for 2002. And once we address that, I'm then going to get to the next proposal, which is the amount of dues for each constituency. These are related, but they're two separate things I think the Council needs to take up.
Okay, and I guess that was part of my question, because if we were adopting the report where the last line talked about this would mean this much for seven, this much for six.
Yeah, my immediate motion is not the amount per constituency, but rather the amount for the DNSO.
Okay, but the key question about the size of the fee is the size of the reserve. So we can't.
Yes, that's correct.
Can't
reserve,
separate
that's
those
right.
issues.
That's right. But there's, I mean,
but we can separately accept the cost side of the budget. If you want to do that,
we could segment into three discussions, but the first and the second would be so closely related.
The second and the third will be closely related. One, we agree about the expenditure item.
Clearly the first item is expenses of $97,961.
Yeah.
So why don't we just take that up and see? And on behalf of the committee, we're proposing the DNSO expenses for 2002. Amount to $97,961 as described in the Budget Committee report. So that's my motion.
Okay. Philip, one comment from Peter.
Peter, go ahead, yeah?
Yeah, I withdraw my objection to that. I see Louis' point, and I certainly am in favor of paying to play and making sure that these subcontractors are provided for, especially knowing that some constituencies, including my own, don't pony up, as Caroline puts it, in a prompt manner. So I withdraw that.
Okay, Peter, thanks for that comment. Let's take Roger's motion anyway, so we make progress on that. So Roger has proposed the acceptance of the cost side of the budget as presented. Can I have a seconder for that motion, please?
Second.
Second by Caroline. Those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those against, please say no. Those abstaining, please say abstain. Okay. So that's on the first part then. Is there further discussion before we move to this question about the size of reserves and therefore the implication for fees? At the moment, the proposal from...
Philip, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I believe I heard an abstention in the background. You might want to ask again.
Did somebody abstain in that vote? Repeat again. Did somebody abstain in that vote?
I apologize.
It may have been an echo, I think, perhaps. There was some echo on this line. So we're moving on then to the second part, is the necessary size of the reserves and the implication then for the fee call for 2002. If we carry over the 57,000 we have at the moment, the fee call is, I understand, 13,995.
We'll get to that in a moment. It depends on how many constituencies you divided them.
Okay, well, yes, assuming seven constituencies.
Right, but I think the immediate issue is of that there are two ways to fund the $98,000 in expenses. One is to fund it from dues, and the other is to fund it by using the cash surplus. My motion is that the cash surplus be kept as a cash reserve in light of ICANN management's requirement that we do so, and that we fund the $98,000 from dues payments in 2002. That's not exactly, by the way, what the Budget Committee recommended, because the Budget Committee's recommendation was for $41,000 cash reserve. So my motion is not, to be clear, the Budget Committee's recommendation, which was $41,000, but in light of the changed numbers, it's consistent with, I think, their intent. So, again, to restate it briefly, that the $98,000 be funded from dues assessments, and that the reported cash reserves for 2001 be maintained as a cash reserve.
I second.
Okay. Would anybody like to speak against that, or are we happy with this concept of a reserve, and therefore a fee call of about $13,000 versus about 12 or 10 or whatever we choose in terms of the reserve size? Are we all comfortable with that, which means that we are willing to commit to paying?
Philip, it's Marilyn.
Marilyn, speak.
I really would like us to discuss this a little bit more. I think that I'm very sensitive to the need to have the reserves in order to be paying our, taking care of our responsibilities and paying our bills on time. But I also do think that the additional roughly $3,000 is going to represent a burden to several of the constituencies.
Marilyn, are you proposing that my proposal is that the entire $57,000 be maintained as a cash reserve and the $98,000 be raised through dues payments? Are you suggesting anything specific other than that? Or just generally saying?
I'd like to have for other constituency to have a chance to comment on the impact on their budget of the additional of their assessment. Between $13,000 and $10,000 will have an impact on several of the constituencies' ability to meet their obligations.
Yeah, I would think that we could compromise here and reduce the cash reserve somewhat. Obviously, it needs to exist in some form, but I would think that a figure of $40,000, you know, that's 40% of your budget, affected, and that would take almost $2,000 off the assessment that the assistants would have to meet, and that could be significant to us.
Caroline?
Caroline, go ahead.
And I guess I would say that to the extent we're going to dip into the reserve to for current dues, that there be proration based on past payments.
If I can, Philip, comment on Milton's particular suggestion, which I do not support. And the reason is, I think, fairly simple. And that is, I think that within reason, we have to simply respect whatever ICANN says it thinks a cash reserve that's necessary is. And obviously, if they're being completely unreasonable, I wouldn't support it. But they are the ones who, after all, we're asking to put themselves on the hook and incur the legal obligation to make the payment. So if they tell us they would like us to keep a $60,000 reserve, they're not asking us to spend any money. They're saying don't leave them exposed to the possibility that there's not enough money to pay the bills. Then my attitude is we should respect their request. They have a right. In other words, if we're going to ask them to be our contracting agent, they have a right to be as conservative within reason as they want. And I don't think that they're... Whether their request for $60,000 is exactly correct or not, I don't think it's unreasonable, and thus I think we need to defer to them on how much is kept there.
Well, the other thing, if you look at our rules for delinquencies, you know, we really go to great lengths at giving constituencies time to get their funding, and so if we, you know, I think again it's I just never even think about touching the cash reserve. We need to shorten our deadline so that that we do get the money sooner than later.
But doesn't the $60,000 reserve assume that they get nothing?
And I think that was the question that I had, Milton, that the reserve seems to assume that none of us will pay. I think Louis's point about the fact that no significant cash flow happens until the middle of the year is a very valid one. But doesn't the $60,000 assume that there's no no payment from any of us?
Yeah, I think if to put it differently, Marilyn, if what you'd say is if no money came in whatsoever, the $60,000 would carry our, let's rough it out and say $100,000 expense budget, you know, about 60% of the way through the year, or 57% of the way through the year, which would put you sometime into August, I guess, is where it would take you, late July or August. So it strikes me that they have every right to ask for that margin of safety, because we're asking them to obligate themselves to make expenses for us.
May I speak? This is Louis.
Louis, go ahead.
Thank you. I think that's been fairly accurately portrayed. The beginning of the year, or perhaps November, is about the high point on the annual fluctuation of the BNSO cash flow. The money comes in our experience, beginning about June for the early payers, occasionally late May, and some of it doesn't come in for a very long time. In fact, we have just had to write off on our books $65,000 of bad debt associated with DNSO contributions because of the aged invoices. So what we are looking at is the existing reserve that you have managed to build up over the DNSO's history so far is about sufficient in terms of the money you would need at the beginning of each year in order to carry you through the first 5 months or so of expenses, plus the 3 months of obligations to AFNIC and FISAT, so that we don't run into a situation that in April we are put in a position of not having enough money in your account and having to start terminating your future agreements and then refusing to spend money we don't have.
Yeah, if I could, I appreciate what ICANN is doing here, and I don't think that they should be completely unprotected, but it's hard for me not to view this in the context of the vote that we held one of our last meetings, that we're asking ICANN, there's a very strong case to be made that ICANN should finance the DNSO, and that the transaction cost of doing so would be much lower, and we'd waste a lot less time with this kind of constituency by constituency trickling in the fund. So that's what's in the back of my mind. I know that in some ways that's a completely separate issue from how we handle this, but in other ways it's completely directly related in that it's a question of who's responsible for the policymaking function of the DNSO. And we are getting the non-commercial constituency into order in that regard, and we see a ramp-up period in which we will gradually come up to speed in our ability to do that if that becomes necessary over the long term. But I just use the $40,000 as kind of a compromise, splitting the difference that didn't put that much at risk and did allow to ease the burden on the constituency somewhat.
Philip, can I suggest that we bring this to a vote, because
we're certainly moving on in time. Yeah, I was just looking at some figures of Milton's suggestion, where at the moment the call per constituency would be $13,995 or something from your cost budget. If we had a $40,000 reserve instead, that would bring the figure to $11,597. But let's just go before we go to a vote and take Roger's proposal. Besides Milton and Marilyn, are there other constituencies who would favour a more modest reserve, or are you in support of the position as explained by Louis in terms of a necessity of our entire reserves at the moment being carried over?
Philip, Tony Holmes here.
Tony.
Certainly I'd like to take this back to the constituency if
we can do that. It's something that we've had a lot of discussion about in the ISPs, the budgetary situation, and I have some sympathy with Milton Jude, so I appreciate the time to take this back.
Philip, can I respond to that? Because I would react in two ways. First, I would emphasize that this is not a policy matter on which we need to reach consensus among constituencies, so that the normal consensus of procedures that are designed to address policy issues really are not applicable. This is an administrative question on which we can look at it differently. And secondly, I'd say that the ISP constituency participated in the budget committee discussions, and thirdly, I'd say we really need to get on with this and decide on our budget and get the invoices out quickly. So I would not agree, I would not support a postponement of action on this. I think we're already well into 2002. We need to wrap this up today. We can come back and reconsider it, and my suggestion was that the budget committee report back to the council on this at a later time to see what the results are, but I don't think it makes sense to defer on this.
If I can just respond to that, it may be an administrative issue, but at the end of the day, it's the members that put their hands in their pockets, so I don't totally agree with that.
Okay, this is Caroline. I would just say that if we, you know, if you're assuming a month delay, that's one more month, as Louis says, that, you know, constituencies are going to be able to invoice and that we're going to expect, and so the extent that you're going to be able to reduce that capital, you, in some respects, increased it because you've now added a month in which ICANN's going to see their money.
Yeah, this is Bruce Tonkin from the Registrars. I suggest we put this to the vote.
Okay, I hear those comments. I mean, my concern why I'm hesitating moving to a vote here is only that I participated as an observer in the budget committee discussions, and where constituencies also able to participate, and the discussions there centered around a reserve figure of 30,000, and therefore the discussion about a figure of 60,000 or so is all very, very new to the discussion, and I think that's why we're spending more time than we perhaps would do in the Mains Council talking about that, because it's happened, it's news that's happened since the budget committee met, and where constituencies normally have their ability to input.
Well, Philip, can I suggest that we sort of take a straw poll and see if the council is of a mind that it wants to vote on this today, or is of a mind that it wants to defer, if you're concerned that there may be constituencies who are uncomfortable acting on this today?
Okay, I think that's a good suggestion. Let's take a vote on that, which is simply to determine where we go. So the question is, do we defer this item to give constituencies a further month to assess the impacts of that and their ability to pay based on a call of something like 13995?
13995 versus 11597. That's the impact of
Milton's
proposal. So that's
defer a month, given of course that deferring is also not good news in terms of calling for funds.
I just want to comment that depending on what people are going back to the constituencies about, I'm suggesting that if we're tapping into money that's previously been paid by constituencies to foot the 2002 billing, that it be prorated based on past payment history, so that it wouldn't be necessarily across the board so much less.
Oh, hang on. Wait a minute. Caroline, your suggestion is that any constituency who hasn't paid in the past would have
of funds being applied to reduce their total payment.
I'm sorry.
That's why I think that this whole extra time to talk about, you know, whether you reduce it from 50 to 30, you know, I just don't see. Are you going to argue with Louis that he's not right in terms of, I mean, he's told us what the past history has been, and we know what our expenses are. So I guess it's hard for me to understand. He may be wrong. Maybe we'll be better at paying, but like Roger says, then we can monitor that at that point readjust. But
Carol, it sounds to me like you're agreeing with me that we should just go to a vote today on it. So let's.
Because I just think that the way that the constituencies voted, you're right, it's a different number, but the concept still is the same. That we understand that there is this kind of capital that we do need to provide to ICANN so that it can meet its duties. And so if Louis is telling us, and I have no reason to believe that he's lying, that what the history is, then I don't see spending a month arguing with him that it should be lower. He's going to give you the same facts. And so I just don't know how you're going to whittle that number. I would love to. I mean, I know everyone thinks the IPC has made money, but they're not going to be happy with this increase either. But
Carolyn, I agree with you 100%, but I think we've spent enough time discussing it, and I think we ought to just kind of vote on. Do we want to do we want to vote on it, and then vote on it if
exactly.
We want to vote on
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I'm happy to go along with that. So let's,
I need to ask Louis a question, if I may, real quick.
Yeah.
Louis told us that ICANN was forced to write off past DNSO unpaid debts, I guess, right?
Well, yes. I mean, you shouldn't. Of course, that doesn't eliminate the indebtedness.
But I thought it would be important for you to clarify that. Louis.
Yeah, yeah. No, the people still owe the money. It's just that our policy is that if and for this type of invoice, if it gets more than 90 days past due, we write it off.
That's my kind of accounting policy, indeed.
All right,
we're going to take a vote quickly then, and this is simply to say: do we delay the discussion on the budget for 1 month, or do we not? If the answer is yes to this, the delay will happen. If the answer is no, we will then take a vote on the budget itself as proposed by Roger. Okay, so it's clear. So a yes vote is to delay, a no vote is to take a vote subsequently. Let me start in reverse order. Richard Tindall.
No.
Carrie.
Oh.
Roger.
No.
Tony Holmes.
No.
Greg. Greg Ruth. I'll come back. Tony Harris. Tony. Oscar Robles is not there. Elizabeth.
No.
Peter.
No.
Philip. Philip Carpentier. Bruce.
No.
Ken.
No.
Milton?
No.
Fanny? YJ?
No.
And YJ for Fanny?
No.
Guillermo?
No.
Lahorse?
No.
Caroline?
No.
Grant?
No.
Marilyn?
No.
Okay, that's pretty universal. Let's go to a vote then. Roger, could you
I'll restate the proposal. We previously agreed to an expense budget for the DNSO of 2002 of $97,961. And my motion is that that expense budget be financed through dues assessments, and that we recognize that about $57,000 is being retained as a cash reserve in response to ICANN's request that we do so. So, very simply, it's that the $97,000 we already, $98,000 we already agreed as our expense budget be financed through constituency dues, and that whatever that the current cash reserve be left as a cash reserve.
Okay.
A procedural point here, I had proposed an amendment to the report, which was that the cash reserve be vote on that amendment.
Milton, we're losing you. Can you speak again?
Yes, I had proposed an amendment that the cash reserve be $40,000 instead of $57,000. And rather than going directly to a vote on the entire budget, we would need to vote on that amendment first. Simply,
Parliamentarily, I think Milton is correct. Unless he's willing to withdraw his amendment, he has an amendment that basically says, instead of the cash reserve of $57,785.63, that the cash reserve be $40,000, and that $16,785.63 be applied to the 2002 expense budget. I obviously oppose Milton's motion. It flies directly in the face of what ICANN has asked us to do. But if he doesn't withdraw his amendment and it gets a second, then we have to take it up, Philip. So I'm hoping it doesn't. I'm hoping it withdraws or it doesn't get a second, but he's parliamentarily correct.
Okay, Roger, I agree with that. Do I have a second for that motion?
I do second.
We have a second from YJ. Okay. Before we take the vote, could I remind Greg Ruth and Tony Harris to unblock their phones? They're on mute at the moment. So that was for Greg and Tony Harris before I take this vote, otherwise we won't hear from you. Okay, let's take this vote. This is on Milton's amendment for a reserve of 40,000 in place of the current reserve of 57 odd. Richard Tindall. Yes is for 40,000, no is against. Richard Tindall? Right. Carrie. Carrie Carp?
Roger.
Absolutely no.
Thank you. Tony Holmes? I'll come back. Greg? Tony Harris? Just after calling it. Elizabeth?
No.
Peter?
No.
Philip?
Abstained.
Abstained. Bruce?
No.
Ken?
No.
Milton?
Yes.
YJ?
Yes.
And Vanny? YJ for Vanny? Guillermo?
No.
LaBolf?
No.
Caroline?
No.
Grant?
No.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Okay, I go back to someone who didn't hear from Tony Harris. Tony Harris, can't hear you. Greg Ruth? No, Tony Holmes?
Yes.
Carrie Carp.
No.
Richard? Let's see if these people are still on the call. So Tony Harris, you're still muted according to my screen. The other callers should be there. I'll take it once more, and then we'll finish the vote. Richard Tindall. Not there. Greg Ruth. No. Tony Harris. No. Oscar is not there. And that completed. So, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. No's. 1... 2, 3, 4, 5 yeses. So that is not carried. The amendment fails. Roger.
Can we now move to a vote on my main motion, which is the $98,000 be financed from constituency dues and the $57,000 be retained as our cash reserve?
I'll second that.
Okay, that was seconded by who?
Peter.
Okay, thanks, Peter. So let's take this vote again. See if Richard's returned. Richard. Harry. Roger.
Yes.
Tony Holmes. Greg. Tony Harris. Elizabeth.
Yes.
Peter.
Yes.
Philip.
Yes.
Bruce.
Yes.
Ken.
Yes.
Milton.
Abstain.
YJ.
Abstain.
Vanny.
Yes, abstain.
Guillermo.
Yes.
Laurence.
Yes, yeah.
Yep. Caroline.
Yes.
Grant.
Yes.
Marilyn.
Yes.
And me, yes. So that is passed. Let me just check on the one missing. Tony Harris. No vote. Greg Ruth. No vote. Tony Holmes. silence from the ISPs. That's a pity. Carrie Carp. No. And Richard. Richard Tindall. Alright, if you're on the call. Not there. Tony Harris also, I still see your mic is muted. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 yeses, 3 abstentions. So that is passed. Thank you very much.
Philip, can we now move to the last part of what we need to do to finish this out, and that is we need to decide on a somewhat more controversial and complicated question, and that is in dividing the $97,961 among constituencies to calculate per constituency dues, we have to decide whether we're going to use the assumption of 7 constituencies, 6 constituencies, or 5 constituencies, and let me briefly explain the issue. The documents for the Names Council today reflect the fact that there are 7 constituencies, and using those documents it would be $13,994 per constituency. However, we have 2 constituencies that have at least raised questions as to whether or not they should be invoiced. One is the CCTLD constituency, which was in arrears for both its 2001 and 2000 dues, and the second is the non-commercial constituency, which has formally raised questions about its obligation or willingness or the propriety of their paying dues. So we have at least 2 constituencies that have raised questions. Both of those, if you'll note from the records, or at least the CCTLD constituency, there are questions about both of those have arrears from 2001 already, and they both have arrears from 2000. The year 2000, for 2 years running, there are arrears. So anyway, the issue is, given that these 2 constituencies have both formally raised questions about their responsibility to pay dues, and given that both of them have...
Roger, when did we raise questions about our responsibility to pay dues?
In the Budget Committee discussions, the issue has come up several times.
Okay, well, Roger, let me stop you there. I'm aware that we've already half an hour overrun in terms of time for this call. The questions you raise, I think, are if we were to go to anything different to 7, I think are worthy of some debate.
Could I ask representatives of the 2 constituencies just to confirm or affirm that they accept responsibility for the dues, though? Since we've got 2 years running of arrears and at least conversations that have raised the question. So, Milton.
Well, let me say, is there any constituency who would wish to comment that they would not fulfil a request for fees at the level that would be calculated by our budget divided by 7?
No, this is Peter. I'll make a comment with respect to past dues. Right now, about 2/3 of my constituency agree that we are responsible for past dues and have indicated an intent to pay but no commitment.